Hello, I'm Michelle Grattan, and this is the Conversations Politics podcast. Last week, a strange tussle between Attorney General George Brandis and Solicitor General Justin Gleeson splashed into the public eye. Senator Brandis is the first law officer of the nation. The Solicitor General is the second law officer, so obviously they need to work closely together. But now there's been a complete falling out. Mr. Gleeson made a submission to a Senate inquiry criticising a binding direction that Senator Brandis had tabled in Parliament just before the election, which specified that all requests for the Solicitor General to provide legal advice must go through the attorney. In other words, ministers, indeed even the Prime Minister, could not go direct to the Solicitor General if they wanted legal advice. Controversy surrounds both the direction itself and whether it's appropriate and legal, and whether Senator Brandis consulted the Solicitor General before he tabled it. Mr. Gleeson says he wasn't consulted, but Senator Brandis insists that he was. Labor is arguing that Senator Brandis has misled the Parliament in his claim to have consulted, and that would be a serious misdemeanor if true. Today, we're joined by Shadow Attorney General Mark Dreyfus to discuss this matter and also Labor's decision to kill off the gay marriage plebiscite. Mark Dreyfus, apart from the issue of whether or not Senator Brandis misled Parliament, what's the bigger picture here? Senator Brandis says that, in essence, his direction is just about orderly process. Do you see another motive?
I see this as the most extraordinary power grab by the Attorney General in the history of the office, since 1916.
Big call.
I know it's a big call, but this office has been in existence since Sir Robert Garran became the first Solicitor General in 1916. In 1964, the office was codified, if you like. The first occupant of the office was Sir Anthony Mason. He wasn't then Sir Anthony, but he went on, after being Solicitor General, to be appointed to the High Court of Australia and subsequently become Chief Justice. He, the current Solicitor General, Justin Gleeson, and a former Solicitor General, Gavin Griffith, have all now said, in different places obviously, because Sir Anthony Mason's view is expressed in a book edited by Gabriel Appleby of the University of New South Wales, all of them are firmly of the view that this is in no sense just a codification, in no sense just orderly practice, but Gavin Griffith, most directly and dramatically, in a submission filed yesterday with the Senate committee that's inquiring into this matter, has said that it will lead to the destruction of the independence of the Solicitor General. So it's not me making the big call, Michelle. This is a call that's been made by others much more eminent in the law than me. And I would accept their view of this, that this is a dramatic interference with the independence of the Solicitor General. It's something that I'm hoping leave aside the misleading of Parliament, which we'll come back to, but the Senate has within its power to disallow this new law that's been made by Senator Brandis, and I'm hoping it will do so.
You think it will?
Yes, I do.
Just to be precise on what the danger of this is, do you think that Senator Brandis would in fact hold up requests or refuse requests coming from other ministers, for example, for legal opinions, or what would be the practical effect of this?
Well, we already know that he's held up requests. Why, I can't say, but the Deputy Secretary of the Department giving evidence to the committee last week, to the Senate committee last week, said that one of the requests had taken 10 days. Now, very often it's urgent that you get legal advice. It's never before been the position that secretaries of Commonwealth departments, other ministers, the Prime Minister, the Governor-General, have been told that the written consent of the Attorney-General is necessary before they get the advice of the Solicitor-General. It's an extraordinary thing to do, and will lead to, Gabriel Appleby put it, a chilling effect on the seeking of advice from the government's chief legal advisor. If it's known that you have to get the written consent of the Attorney General first. Gavin Griffiths, as it happens, goes out of his way in the submission filed yesterday to agree with Professor Appleby's view that it will have a chilling effect. And he put it very colourfully by saying that it brings to mind a dog on a lead. This is from a former Solicitor General of the Commonwealth, someone, Gavin Griffiths, who is in full-time practice today, that he has chosen to use these words, I think, shows the importance of this matter.
Another element in this row is that Justin Gleeson obviously believes he's being overlooked, that the government, specifically Senator Brandis, is going to others for advice. Do you think that the Attorney General should be able to turn to others for advice?
I think that the Solicitor General of the Commonwealth has to be the primary source of advice on the important matters of the government. I'm not for a moment suggesting that that in a complex, large government with 168,000 Australian public servants, that every single legal question that the government comes into contact with has to go to the Solicitor General. Clearly, that at a practical level couldn't be the case. But matters like the plebiscite bill, which the Parliament is now dealing with, or the prorogation of Parliament that occurred earlier this year, or the citizenship bill, they are matters which the government should go to the Solicitor General first, and he needs to be the primary source of legal advice on important legal matters to the government.
You've mentioned the Appleby book. In that, you're quoted as a former Attorney General saying that you did allow for the possibility of seeking alternative advice to that of the Solicitor General.
Well, I appreciate I've been misquoted in the Senate today by George Brandis. If you look at the passage in the book written by Professor Appleby about the Solicitors General of the Commonwealth, you'll see that not only I, but Christian Porter, now a cabinet minister in the Turnbull government, expressed the view that it's open to an Attorney General. I've been an Attorney General. Christian Porter's been an Attorney General of Western Australia. We both have the view that sometimes it might be appropriate to seek an additional opinion to that of the Solicitor General, and I don't think there can be anything wrong with that. That's all I've said, all Professor Appleby quotes me as saying, and Christian Porter is saying as well. That's a very different situation to what appears to have occurred here, which is the sidelining of the Solicitor General of the Commonwealth. That's what Justin Gleeson, in his letter of the 12th of November 2015 to the Attorney General, which he annexes to his submission, and perhaps amusingly, George Brandis chose to provide to the Senate committee, but in a much redacted form, where he took out about two-thirds of the letter. Why he chose to do that when Justin Gleeson had already produced the letter to the Senate committee with only, I think, half a line redacted, I'm not sure. But in that letter, the Solicitor General complains to the Attorney General that he has in effect been sidelined. And that's something that is of great concern. We need to have a proper working relationship between the Solicitor General and the whole of the government. We need to have that relationship not interfered with by the Attorney General, as he is seeking to do with this direction. And we need to not have going to alternative counsel, apparently because George Brandis fears the advice that might be given by the Solicitor General. The starting point ought to be the advice of the Solicitor General on all matters of importance.
If Senator Brandis's direction is knocked out by the Senate, as does seem likely, how does the working relationship between these two men then continue?
Well, I actually think that it shouldn't be forced to continue, because I think that Senator Brandis should resign. I think he's demonstrated repeatedly that he's unfit for office, and this latest episode, not being the first time he's misled the Senate, is a dreadful episode. He has misled the Senate in a really important matter, important because the direction is itself important, leading potentially to the destruction of the independence of the Solicitor General. But it's important also because the matter he has misled on is to say to the Senate of the Commonwealth that he consulted the Solicitor General about this change of the law. And clearly, on any view, as a matter of fact, this isn't a matter of opinion, it's not a matter of how you interpret the word consult. He didn't consult the Solicitor General about this change to the law.
Well, so far the Prime Minister seems to be standing firm behind his minister. Do you think there's a prospect that Mr. Gleeson could get so frustrated with this row that he quits?
Well, I absolutely hope that the excellent service that Justin Gleeson has provided to the Commonwealth of Australia since 2012 continues. I would hate to think that the dreadful treatment of him and the office by Senator Brandis would lead to that, because I happen to think that Australia has benefited greatly from the advice and service that Justin Gleeson has provided.
And he worked with you, of course, when you were Attorney General, right?
Yes, and not only did I have a chance to receive his advice on a range of topics, but I had the honour and privilege of working with him at The Hague before the International Court of Justice in the Whaling case. It's a unique circumstance that because by and large the Attorney General no longer appears in court in Australia, but is required to. The Chief Law Officer, the first law officer of a country, is required to appear before the International Court of Justice. And of course I was there at The Hague with Justin Gleeson by my side. He'd been working on the case for many, many months.
Well, I think this row has a fair way to run yet, as does another issue that's been very dominant this week, and that is the whole argument about same-sex marriage. Labor's decided, as expected, to reject the plebiscite. Malcolm Turnbull's locked in between the Conservatives, who say that they won't have a conscience vote, a vote on the floor of the Parliament, and the pressure to deliver on same-sex marriage. But do you think that there's a possibility now that this issue will recede in the public mind and therefore it will be more difficult for Labor to keep pressure on the government?
I don't think so. I think that what's actually occurred is that the proposal for the plebiscite has galvanised supporters of marriage equality and in their efforts which to prevent the plebiscite from taking place. And I might say that 6 months ago, opinion polling was telling us that a majority of Australians favoured the plebiscite. That's turned right around, and repeated opinion polls in the last three or four weeks have shown that there's a substantial majority of Australians against the plebiscite. In no small part, that's due to the efforts of supporters of marriage equality, the LGBTI community, who've concluded that they don't want a plebiscite. And what I'm suggesting is that that campaigning effort that they've put in, I think, will rapidly translate into a renewed push for a free vote in the Parliament.
But do you realistically think that there's any chance of some moderates crossing the floor to allow that to happen?
I do. And I think that it's embarrassing that Australia is now the last developed English-speaking country not to have marriage equality. Canada's had it since 2006, New Zealand since 2013 or 14, the United Kingdom around that, well, longer than that, and the United States, courtesy of a decision of the United States Supreme Court, for a couple of years now. Australia is now lagging behind. And if it's true that, again, a substantial majority of Australians favour marriage equality, that's something that George Brandis has said as the minister responsible for the Marriage Act, and that that Mr Turnbull has repeatedly said, what are we waiting for? I appreciate that there's internal problems in the Liberal Party, but why should it be the case that those internal problems in the Liberal Party are a block to this country moving on to marriage equality?
But the political reality is that this would blow up the Liberal Party, wouldn't it, if people crossed the floor, a parliamentary vote was forced?
Well, I'm not a member of the Liberal Party.
But people you're no doubt an astute political observer, long-time observer.
Commentators such as yourself, Michelle, have suggested that it would cause tremendous problems in the Liberal Party, but we've heard that suggested before. Things change very fast in Australian politics, and I think that it's absolutely a possibility that we certainly won't have to wait for the full term of this Parliament to get a free vote on the floor of the Australian Parliament.
Now, one central reason in the end that Labor gave for opposing the plebiscite was that it would bring harm to same-sex people, that especially young people would be traumatised by the debate about their family circumstances. In light of that, did you have any concerns this week about Labor having the children of same-sex people at that press conference where it announced its decision? Because those children, some of them around 8, 9, 10, would be able to be recognised on television.
All of them, all of those families who were present at the press conference that we held on Tuesday volunteered to come. They wanted to congratulate Labor for the stance that we took and decided on at the caucus meeting on Tuesday. It's exactly the same sentiment that was expressed by LGBTI groups today on the lawns of Parliament, presenting a large thank you card to the Leader of the Opposition and Labor members.
It's one thing for parents to consent, but these are children who don't necessarily know the implications of being there.
They were very pleased to be there. Of course, the children are children, Michelle, but in no sense were they anything other than volunteers. They wanted to be present at this press conference.
If you were laying money at this point, would you say that at the time of the next election, it's likely this issue will still be unresolved?
I would rate it less likely than not that it will be unresolved. That's a double negative.
In other words, you think it'll be fixed?
It's more likely than not that this matter will have been dealt with sometime in the next 2.5 years.
If it's not dealt with, Labor will come up to another national conference and it will be faced with having to decide whether to stay with its existing policy, which is after the next election, Labor MPs are bound to vote for same-sex marriage. They won't have the conscience vote that they would enjoy, or the free vote they would enjoy if it came up in the next couple of years. Do you think that that policy should remain? Is there a problem with going to a binding vote?
Well, I think that this is a human rights matter. That's my own view. And I argued in favour and voted in favour of the binding vote. And that would remain my position. So that's my position. And let's see if it's still a position that would give difficulty, because by the time of the next Labor conference, this matter may well have been dealt with in the Parliament.
By the same token, while you would regard it as a matter of rights, some of your religious colleagues think that it is a conscience matter. Would they be comfortable with going to a binding vote, do you think, given that if you cross the floor in the Labor Party, you're out?
Well, this is a matter on which there's been a tremendous change of opinion, both within Australian society and within the Labor Party. And I've looked just now, say, at the last 10 years of how large those shifts in opinion have been. I'm not going to attempt to speak for anybody, any of my caucus colleagues, about this matter, because, and it may be that it's entirely hypothetical, because my hope is that this will have been dealt with by the time of the next Labor conference.
Mark Dreyfus, thank you very much for talking with the conversation today, and that's all from our podcast. Thanks to my producer, Pat Hutchins. We'll be back again soon. I'm Michelle Grattan. Goodbye for now.